This is the worst podcast I've ever been on.
These guys are shit. It's true. It's true.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Our traveling fanboys.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the longest running
weekly episodic comic book podcast in all of Place to Be Nation.
I am Greg Phillips. That other voice you heard harmonizing with me so beautifully is that of Nick Duke, and we are the Hard Traveling Fanboys. We are coming to you from Ho Ho Loon Plaza in beautiful and sunny Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, inside the L-shaped studio, where we are bringing you another edition of Countdown, which, of course, is our monthly show where we count things down, if you can imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nick, before we get into all that hullabaloo, how was your week?
Oh, it was fine. It was good. It's been a good week. Another week closer to football season, which, as we all know, I look forward to every year. So a few short weeks, I'll be making the trip up to Nashville. Very much looking forward to that. So getting closer.
Now, what's in Nashville?
The Georgia Vanderbilt game.
Ah. And also?
Nashville hot chicken.
And the Grand Ole Opry.
The Grand Ole Opry, yes.
A lot of legends have come through there, Nick. Little Jimmy Dickens. Porter Wagner. Others, I'm sure. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, lots of legit little Jimmy Dickens, as you said. Red Sovine, I'm sure he came through there at some point.
Bobby Bear.
Hank Williams got fired from the Opry.
And that was that's what caused his greatest shame, actually.
It is. There you go. See?
What I understand. Hank! Let's talk about your daddy.
Why does your Waylon Jennings sound oddly like Hank Hill?
They're very similar. They have similar cadences.
No.
Damn it. Let's talk about my Bobby. Anyway. What we're doing here today is we are picking up an episode of Countdown based off of a nugget that just wouldn't flush. A nugget of a conversation that we had here. Oh, gosh, what's it been, Nick? 2-3 weeks now? Whenever we were talking during Spider Month.
Yeah, Spider Month. We had a countdown of our top 5 Spider-Man villains. And during that discussion, we had a rather heated debate because you don't think Spider-Man has a very good rogues gallery. You've said that.
Correct.
I said it's without question the second greatest rogues gallery in comics, behind only Batman. And that led to a little bit of a mini debate. So we figured, why not stretch that out? And see what our opinions on the top rogues galleries in all of comics would be.
Yes, that elongated way of explaining it was exactly what happened. My assertion, to be clear, I understand that objectively speaking, depth-wise, Spider-Man has a great rogues gallery. To me, in my subjective interpretation of the characters, I have never attached myself to Spider-Man's rogues gallery outside of one or two characters. They've never really done it for me. They've never lit me on fire, you might say, outside of a handful, which we talked about on that episode of Countdown.
But my argument is that a handful is probably more than most other comic book characters would have.
I would disagree. Most, certainly, but not more than these five that made four, well, others that made my list. And that also would also give you the indication of the quality of the villains, the quality of the good villains being a little bit higher, some of these other characters, and then depth in other cases. But yeah, certainly, I'm not saying there's a lot of characters with better rogues galleries. I was joking around about the whole, who did I say, Witchblade? You know?
I don't even know.
I was joking around about the Max and all that. But certainly, I think that number two, no, not a lock by any stretch of the imagination. So, with that being said, we are going to count down our five top rogues galleries in comics.
With one major caveat.
Yes, no Batman.
Yeah, I mean, we all, I think the entirety of the comics reading community agrees that Batman has the best rogues gallery. Mm-hmm. There's no debate about that. I've never seen anyone try to argue otherwise. So, for the purpose of this discussion, we're excluding Batman. So, Batman is the understood number one. If you want to look at this as our six through two, you can look at it that way. But we're saying our top five rogues galleries, not including Batman, essentially.
Correctamundo. And before we get started, I should have actually solicited this on Twitter, but then again, I'm lazy and I don't like Twitter. But if you would like to submit your list of your top five rogues galleries, please get those in. Send those lists to us on Twitter at gphillips8652, at nickduke87, and let us know what your top five rogues galleries are in comics. Also, you can join the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page, or you can send us an email. I really wouldn't recommend that, though. So, with all that aside, with all that hullabaloo, with all that buildup, let's get started with Nick's number five.
Oh, why do I have to start?
You don't have to. I can start if you'd prefer.
Yeah, why don't you start it? Since you're the one who says there's so many rogues galleries,
well, you always
better
start
than Spider-Man.
Though. I mean, well, I always
no,
start.
No, you
though.
Don't. That's
you
not
make
true.
Me start,
no.
So you can get the big moment at the end. No. I'm going to start us in the most uneventful way possible, in the most boring way possible. Nick, are you ready for this?
I'm ready for it.
At number five on my rogues galleries list of comic book heroes, I had no choice.
Oh my God.
But to put Spider-Man.
Oh. Okay.
Are you ready? Are you ready for me to make my argument for why he deserves to make the top five?
I'm more interested in your argument for why he doesn't rank higher, but
I've already made that.
We can have a little bit of both. Go ahead. Why does he deserve to make the top five, Greg?
Here's why Spider-Man deserves to make the top five. Because there aren't a lot of good rogues galleries in comics. There really are. I mean, let me talk about my selection process. Indulge me for just a moment, yeah. Shall you, Nick? I don't think that's the proper use of shall. Anyway, when I was coming up with my rogues galleries here, I was thinking of any way I could possibly keep Spider-Man off my list, just to work the gimmick a little bit, you know, as we do on occasion.
Yeah, work the gimmick.
I'm going to work the gimmick, you know, making the towns like Cowboy taught me.
Yep.
And I started thinking, I was like, who can I put in there? Who can I put in there? Well, there's Thor. But then I thought about it.
Yeah, I wanted to. As you know, I'm a Thor homer, and I couldn't find a way myself.
Yeah,
so.
Thor's got Loki. You know, Thor's got Surtur. Thor's got Enchantress. Those are good villains.
Malekith.
The
Man-Gog.
Gore, the God Butcher. I don't know anything about the Man-Gog. I haven't read enough Thor. But
the
Gore,
Man-Gog
the God
Man-Gog is kind of Thor's doomsday, like a purely physical threat with no real, like, character motivation.
I guess you could also throw what is that armor?
The Destroyer.
Destroyer armor in there as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I wouldn't really count that because the Destroyer is more of a like just a thing like that somebody else has to control. So
Frost Giant certainly.
Frost
would be
Giant, Luffy, yeah.
So Thor probably came the closest of anyone to getting in on this five spot, but ultimately I thought to myself, there's just not enough depth there, mm-hmm. and really based on the comics that I've read, I've only really ever been drawn to Loki and Thor. Yeah, I haven't read enough Thor comics to get into these other ones. So I was thinking, who else might be in there? Well, I could get a team, like the Justice League. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, most of the good Justice League villains are just singles villains for other characters.
Right.
You know, you think of Darkseid or whoever, you know, you might want to throw in there.
Which some would argue that Darkseid, for example, would be more of a Justice League villain than a solo villain. You know, but I think you can go either way on that.
We can have that discussion later on my list, but you have Starro the Conqueror and people like that, but nothing, they're not none that really stood out to me.
The Society of Supervillains or the Injustice
Supervillains,
League.
Supervillains, certainly, yeah, all those would count.
Whatever,
good,
the Legion of Doom, whichever version of the evil team they're going with.
Crime Syndicate, certainly.
Crime Syndicate, yeah.
you know, you could go with any of those. Those are legit arguments, I suppose. But I was like, I don't know. Teen Titans, certainly they have two very prominent villains with Deathstroke and Trigun. But unfortunately, I couldn't think of many. Brother Blood would be another one. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't think of any big ones beyond that that I've encountered that were particularly great. So then I turned myself over to what Marvel teams might be out there. The Avengers? Well, you've got Ultron, and you've got Kang the Conqueror.
Some would consider Thanos to be an Avengers villain at this point.
Some would consider that. Let's even give him that, to be generous. But then beyond that, I couldn't really think of too many just Avengers villains that were intriguing to me.
Right.
Fantastic Four, we've been over my thoughts on them and their entire universe of characters. So,
just dismissing the Fantastic Four rogues gallery out of hand,
there's Galactus and there's Doctor Doom. And there's Ego the Living Planet, I guess. And the rest of them, I ain't got no time for no mole man, Nick. I'm just saying. Unless it's Hans Mole Man, then I've got a lot of time for him.
What about if it's Arnold as Doctor Doom?
Now, in that case, that changes the game because the quality, you know, there's levels to this shit, as they say. The quality level of Arnold as Dr. Doom would artificially elevate the quantity of the Rogues Gallery. So that would actually help a lot. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So this is a long-winded way of getting around, you know, running down all these other characters in their Rogues Galleries and being like, you know, what is this? You know, perhaps if I were a Legion of Superheroes fan, I might be or familiar with them. I might know more of their villains, but I couldn't think of any. I was just really struggling. Aquaman has some. What you run into, Nick, in this is you run into guys that have one or two great villains,
right?
And then a lot of villains.
But okay, go ahead.
So anyway, that's ultimately what led me to Spider-Man. Spider-Man has Norman Osborn as the Green Goblin. You got Harris Osborn as the second Green Goblin. You've got the Venom, as I almost called him. You got the Kingpin. You've got
Carnage.
Carnage, I suppose. And you've
Carnage was a good villain for a brief time. Like, you know.
Yeah, the problem
overexposure, but you know,
right? The problem that I have with Carnage is there was never any reason for him to exist because Venom never should have turned babyface. But
that's probably true.
But on the other hand, Carnage was good for a time. You've got my boy the Jackal that everybody mocks me for.
The Jackal, my lord.
And you know, you got a lot of villains. You got low level guys like Rhino, Shocker,
Electro, Rhino, you know, the Lizard.
Jobbers. Yeah, I've never liked the Lizard.
Mysterio. The Chameleon. Mysterio's
okay.
The Chameleon, Crime Master.
The Rose. Kingpin's son, the Rose. Yeah.
The Spot.
I don't know nothing about no Spot. Hydro Man.
Hydro Man. Sandman. Yeah. You got lots. So
there's a lot of. There's a lot.
Aquaman.
The sheer. Cable Vision. The sheer quantity of villains for Spider-Man boisters his Rose Gallery, even if I would argue the quality for me is not that high across the board. So that's why Spider-Man makes my five, but what keeps him from higher up on the list is, as I've mentioned, I just don't have the connection to his villains. I think Norman Osborn's played out. Now, yes, a lot of villains are played out in comics, whether they be the Joker, Lex Luthor, what have you. The difference is I don't think Norman is as compelling as those other two. He's a good character, no doubt. But I just don't know. I feel like I've seen every Norman Osborn story there is to tell. And
now, clearly, you haven't seen Norman bonded with the Carnage symbiote.
Carnage, yes. Red, what is it? Red Carnage or
Red Goblin?
Red Goblin, yes. Mm-hmm. Red Carnage would just be Carnage. By the way,
telling tales out of school here a little bit, but I got a Facebook message from Greg during San Diego Comic Con that said, "What in the blue hell is a Red Goblin?" And I had to explain it.
That is correct. That did indeed happen, and So Norman's a great villain, but never really connected with me necessarily. Harry is amazing as Green Goblin too, but kind of had a story and was done. And then you get into,
or should have been anyway.
Venom, who I loved as a villain, but then they turned him babyface.
Yeah, isn't really a villain anymore.
They turned him baby, and. Then you had, of course, Kraven, who we've just read that amazing Kraven's Last Hunt. So I'd have to include him in the great villains list.
You almost, Spider-Man, I'll have more to say later.
But with the other villain, the Ancel, and those are good. These are all good things. Kingpin, of course. Kingpin's an amazing Spider-Man villain. Although he's kind of been co-opted by Daredevil and the Punisher and other characters over the years. So, but then when you get to the other villains that people think of as great Spider-Man villains, Mysterio, the Lizard, Shocker and Rhino and Tombstone, people like that.
Electro.
They've never really done much. I like Electro from a conceptual standpoint. I like Electro, like the costume, like the powers, but I don't know that I've ever read a story in which Electro particularly excited me, nor have I read an exciting Mysterio story in the comics, nor have I read an exciting Shocker or Rhino story in the comics. So it's like most of the versions of these characters that I like may have come from movies or TV shows or whatever. So I don't know. I've never really had that strong bond with Spidey's Rogues Gallery the way that I have with some of these other characters. And admittedly, part of that owes to my connection with the other heroes that are on this list, because, you know, I'm not the biggest Spider-Man fan in the world, but I like Spider-Man. He's never been my favorite hero at any point in my life. So that's ultimately why I can't have Spider-Man any higher than 5 on my Rogues Gallery's list, Nick.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can understand that. I don't agree with it, but I will address that down the road. Moving on to my number 5 and just kind of, you know, touching what you touched on, how I formulated my list. First of all, the first thing a character had to have was at least one what I would consider undisputably A-list villain. And unfortunately, that cuts a lot of characters out. Like Green Arrow, as you know, is a favorite character of mine. I don't think he has an undisputably A-list villain. I would argue that the Avengers don't really have, unless you're counting Thanos, an undisputedly A-list villain. Ultron is probably the closest to that. So there are lots of characters and concepts that just weren't even going to qualify based on that. And so then I started looking, all right, who's got more than one undisputedly A-list villain? And that was kind of started to form the bones of my list. And then from there, I was kind of going for depth after that, where if you have one or two heavy hitters and then, you know, at least some other quality bit players, I can probably find a spot for you on my list. So
Johnny Depth.
Here we go, Greg. Are you ready for my number 5?
I don't think I am ready for this, given the warning you gave me earlier in the day. I have a thought on what you're going to go with, but let's see.
At number 5, I'm going with the Fantastic Four.
Satan's Revenge. That was actually the worst of the two options that I had in my mind.
What was your other option?
I thought you were going to pick Preacher as a Rogues Gallery.
That's a really good idea. Damn it.
I was thinking
Hair Star, Odin Kincannon, the Messiah. What was his name? The All Father?
The All Father.
Oh, Jesus Decide.
God.
Oh, man. That's good shit. That's such good shit, pal. No, I went with the Fantastic Four. And so by the criteria I laid out a minute ago, I think the Fantastic Four are one of the few that have two undisputedly A-list villains. One, of course, being Doctor Doom. Arguably the biggest character left out there for the MCU to still introduce. A character that hasn't really been done right in movies to date, and yet a character with tons of potential. Cannot wait to see how they handle him going forward in the films, and a character who has decades of great stories in the comics, to include most recently, you know, one of my favorite stories from a few years ago, Secret Wars, the 2015 edition of Secret Wars. So Doctor Doom is great. A-list, undisputedly. Galactus. I'm going to count him as a Fantastic Four villain. I know some people would probably argue more of an Avengers villain. I think his most notable appearances from his early days are typically in Fantastic Four pages. And I think
he's definitely a Fantastic Four villain for the record.
So Fantastic Four, I mean, Galactus, just a great, you know, massive threat. One of those threats in comics that makes you go, oh, man, how in the hell can they beat this guy? But then the thing people don't realize, I guess, until you go back and read some of that early Fantastic Four is kind of and I'm not saying these guys are like, you know, these are not first round draft picks of villains, but there are some pretty decent villains in here. Don't forget the Skrulls got their start as Fantastic Four villains. Namor the Submariner made his reintroduction into the Marvel Universe, and for many years in the Silver Age of Marvel, was a Fantastic Four villain, first and foremost. The Puppet Master, kind of a cheesy villain, I'll grant you, but one of the things I love about villains often are their ties to our heroes, and him being, I believe, the stepfather of the things beloved Alicia Masters adds a whole other dimension to that. You go further down the list, you get into stuff like the Super Skrull, the Molecule Man, and
Moleculo.
The Frightful Four, who independently are kind of cheesy characters, but you put them together, and it's that nice, like, mirror image analog kind of thing. And let's not forget, Greg, you also have the Hatemonger. How can we forget the Hatemonger when we're talking about any collection of great villains?
I mean, the Hatemonger really started it all for mongers in the MCU, or in the Marvel Universe.
But even then, you keep going down the list. I mean, Ronan the Accuser got to start in the pages of Fantastic Four. Annihilus got to start in the pages of Fantastic Four. Both characters who have kind of expanded out in the Marvel Universe, but got their start challenging the first family of Marvel. And so, to me, when I started running down the list, I was like, man, this is... I guess I had forgotten just how deep it was. Kang the Conqueror first made his appearance in the Fantastic Four. And they were on the cusp. They're at number five. And then what put it over the top was I stopped and I started thinking about it. Okay, what about my beloved Ultimate Universe? And one of the greatest Fantastic Four-related ideas that has ever existed, or to my mind will ever exist, is a ultimate exclusive Fantastic Four villain in the form of the Maker, the evil version of Reed Richards, who has turned on his adopted family and become one of the biggest villains in the Ultimate Universe, so much so that he was one of the characters who survived Secret Wars and is now a full-time featured character in the main 616 Marvel Universe. So...
I was going to say, I think you could make a compelling argument that the greatest Fantastic Four villain is Reed Richards.
Well, you know, I'll leave it up to you and Russell to troll our good friend Mike on Twitter. I have no interest in doing so. I have no real issue with Reed Richards. He's fine in my Marvel Age reading. Is he the best of the Fantastic Four? No, but he's not that offensive to this point. I'm sure he gets much more boring as we go forward. But, yeah, Fantastic Four, surprising even myself. So, there it is, Fantastic Four at five.
Oh, well, fair enough. But do you want me to offer my rebuttal?
Sure.
My only rebuttal would be that the Fantastic Four are boring garbage and they wear off on their villains.
I disagree. Dr. Doom is a case where he's still a compelling character, and he's been weighed down by your logic. He's been weighed down by 50 years of suck.
What is Dr. Doom's isn't his gimmick that he's just jealous of Reed Richards? That's his deal.
That's
jealous.
That's part of it. That is one of his driving factors. There's also some people will go with the tragic mother storyline where he was seeking simply to bring his mother back, and that kind of led to this downward spiral of his facial injuries and him getting kicked out of school, and then his single-minded belief that he knows what's best for the world if only people would listen to him.
Right. So he's Reed Richards, just an inverse. Which makes an argument for Reed Richards as the greatest Fantastic Four villain. But no, Dr. Doom's a good, no one will argue against that. He's a good character. Galactus, I think, is a great character. The argument can be made that he's not even a villain, even though he is clearly a villain. But the argument can be made that, you know, when at his most fundamental, he is just seeking to be. He is not seeking to destroy for destruction's sake, like so many of these corny comic book villains. But then, okay, you get beyond that, and then you get in all, you know, the Skrulls. I guess you could count them as Fantastic Four villains, and they're fine. You know, where do you go from there? Who else did you name, Nick? Give me some names here.
Oh, the Puppet Master.
Nothing.
Not even the fact.
I got nothing. The Puppet, if you're going to use the Puppet Master for the Fantastic Four, I should get to use the Toy Man for Superman.
Good Lord. Anyway.
Toy Man's way better than Puppet Master.
Annihilus, Ronan the Accuser.
I don't know anything about Annihilus, really. Ronan the Accuser, I only know from the movie. So.
That's true. The Frightful Four, the Super Skrull, Kang the Conqueror, the Maker.
Yeah, it's fine. Kang, I think Kang is an Avengers villain. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I feel like Kang is an Avengers villain. But nonetheless, I can't buy an argument on these guys. But you know, it's your opinion. That's perfectly your right to have. I'm just so anti Fantastic Four that it's hard for me to.
I cannot wait. I hope we are still doing this podcast when inevitably the MCU Fantastic Four movie comes out and it's good. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
What do you want me to say?
No, I don't want you to say anything. I'm just saying that day will be a wonderful day.
I expect that it will be awesome because of the MCU. I mean, but hell, the MCU made me care about tons of characters. I never liked Captain America until the MCU. And then I've gone back and now can retroactively appreciate Captain America in a way that I couldn't pre-MCU.
That's all I'm saying is you'll be able to retroactively appreciate the Fantastic Four.
You yourself used to be quite the Captain America trash talker at one time.
That's true. And I would argue I still haven't read very many good stories of his in the comics, but that's neither here nor there.
Now you've been... People can listen to those stories in the Marvel Age podcast.
Which we have universally panned, almost.
Well.
Anyway, moving on.
Perhaps it'll turn around soon. At number four, I'm going to move on from one of my least favorite comic book character concepts in the Fantastic Four at Nick's Five to probably my favorite collection of comic book characters. Because my number four selection on Rogues Gallery is Green Lantern.
Mm.
So I wrote a little list here of Green Lantern villains that I could come up with.
Yes.
And we're going to run through these.
Yes.
So Green Lantern, when I say Green Lantern, I am cheating a little bit with this. Because I'm not just counting Hal Jordan. I'm also counting John Stewart, Guy Gardner, Kyle Rayner.
Yeah.
And they're assorted.
Right.
They're assorted villains. But certainly, for the most part, it's Hal Jordan villains. But there are some others thrown in there. And Green Lantern is a character who the strength of the mythos you and I have talked about is that space cops aspect. You know, the camaraderie of the heroes with one another. But they also, especially if you're telling galactic scale stories, you have to have compelling villains. And my argument would be that Green Lantern, particularly in the modern era...
Yeah, the last 15 years, really.
Yes, has one of the more compelling lists of villains in comics. And here are just a few. Obviously, we'll start with the heavy hitter of Sinestro.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best villains in comics. Under the penmanship of Geoff Johns, one of the greatest villains in the history of comics to me. Johns' version of Sinestro would be in my top probably two if I'm talking about my favorite villains in comics. We've probably done that countdown before, but he had to be somewhere high on my list. What we saw with Sinestro over the course of a decade and a half of character work was nothing short of phenomenal. Like character reclamation. Gee, thank you.
And that was mostly early 90s, actually.
Yeah, well, yeah, 89 to early 90s.
Yeah.
And
but primarily, I believe you're talking about Emerald Dawn and Emerald Dawn 2, which would have kind of redefined the Hal Sinestro relationship as we understand it. So that would have been early 90s.
And then Johns picked that up and just took it to a whole new level in after that. So Sinestro,
the bones of Geoff Johns' secret origins are pretty much laid out in Emerald Dawn 1 and 2. There are modifications to be sure, but it's pretty close in terms of the fundamental arc of the story.
And then along with Sinestro, you have the Sinestro core.
Mm-hmm.
Which gives you characters such as Arkillo that stood out and became their own legendary characters in Green Lantern lore. Arkillo has had even a heroic arc of sorts as a partnership with Guy Gardner in recent years. But primarily, Arkillo is still known as the enforcer, if you will, the Arn Anderson to Sinestro's Ric Flair, Nick, in the Sinestro Corps. And certainly, you've got Crib that was known for kidnapping children and imprisoning them. Was it Nyssa? Lisa Drack, the keeper of the Sinestro Corps book and the Book of the Black.
The
Sinestro Corps really opened the doors to a bevy of great villains.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got my favorite Green Lantern side character, Larfleeze, Agent Orange, who I think still qualifies as a Green Lantern villain at this point.
Yeah.
And then you've got Atrocitus and the Red Lanterns. Certainly, they carved out such a niche in the DC universe that they got their own comic book title for a while. And he's certainly a compelling villain. Black Hand.
Mm-hmm.
Another reclamation project from Geoff Johns. He came a long way from the Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Black Hand story that we read where he was talking about, I don't even remember, something about...
Perfume. First perfume. You spray him, then you tickle him.
And then you tickle
him. That's what he said. That's a quote.
So Black Hand, another great redemption project. One of my favorite parts of the Blackest Night saga is seeing his story and his progression of how he becomes the guy that we know him as now, also in Secret Origin. So then you get beyond that, and you get Necron, the mastermind behind Blackest Night, who's sort of a, you know, every character has that supernatural big bad that is almost impossible to defeat one-on-one. You know, I think of Surtur the Fire Demon for Thor, or, you know, someone like an Ultron for the Avengers, or someone like that. So that's sort of Necron. He's this otherworldly, you know, the shit just got real when he shows up. Then you get into more of your ancillary characters like the Skrulls, the Dominators, the Controllers, the Spider Guild, all these different alien races that I couldn't remember the name of the alien race that could shapeshift that was the subject of one of those early Robert Venditti stories.
I don't remember either.
And then you got a Kyle Rayner villain of a Major Force, the guy that stuffed the girlfriend in the refrigerator, famously.
Yes. Most notable for that, yes.
Sonar, not one of my favorite Green Lantern villains, but certainly a Green Lantern villain.
Go ahead and throw Goldface in there while you're at it.
That was my next one, Goldface.
I knew when you started getting into Sonar, I was like, Greg must be reading a list of Silver Age Green Lantern villains from Wikipedia. So Goldface has got to be coming up.
Well, then also Cyborg Superman, who became a Green Lantern villain.
Yeah, I was about to say, you kind of could have an interesting argument there. I would probably tend to think of him more of as a Superman villain, but he is responsible for one of the most notable events in Green Lantern's character history. So a little bit
absolutely.
Of both.
Absolutely. And was the primary villain in the second story arc of Geoff Johns' Green Lantern run.
The Shark, the King Shark.
King Shark, I didn't even include on this, but certainly. And what about this one? Because this is another one that could go, I actually used him for Green Lantern rather than Superman, Mongol. Because Mongol was also involved in that Coast City incident. And then turned into a major villain. Not just Mongol, by the way, but Mongol's children, remember? Because the original Mongol dies, and then his kids, in succession, go after the Green Lantern Corps to try to get revenge for their dad. They fail miserably. Remember that great, what was it, in the Sinestro Corps War, that great fight between, or no, it was in Blackest Night or Sinestro, I can't remember. There's that great fight between Sinestro and Mongol over possession of the Sinestro Corps, and Sinestro ends up beating Mongol into the grave, essentially.
That's in Blackest Night, because after the events of Sinestro Corps, Sinestro is gone for a while, and then when he comes back, he has to defeat Mongol.
Yeah, great stuff, because Mongol had ripped out Atrocitus' tongue. Yeah, good stuff. Anyway, so that's my list. But all of that to be said, all of these villains are a part of stories that mean a lot to me. Mm-hmm. Except for Goldface and Sonar and Major Force. But all of these characters, other than that, are parts of stories that mean a lot to me, that have influenced my fandom and comics, and that have been a part of some of the great modern comic book stories, in my opinion. So all of these villains put Green Lantern in at number 4, which tells you that there's a lot of great villains coming up ahead on the list.
Absolutely, and I will have more to say about the Fantastic Four, or excuse me, about the Green Lantern Corps here in just a moment. My number 4, from one Marvel team concept to another, I'm going to put the X-Men at number 4. It's been no secret, if you've listened to the podcast in the past, that the X-Men are not exactly my favorite concept in all of comics. I appreciate the X-Men, I understand their importance, but never really been one that has had much of a personal tie to me. That being said, even from afar, difficult not to appreciate the depth of the Rogues Gallery. Obviously, you start with the biggest of them all, and that being Magneto, arguably one of, if not the most compelling villain in terms of a backstory in all of Marvel Comics. What with the story of being, if you're going with the interpretation of being a Holocaust survivor who experienced one form of prejudice only early in life, only to now be confronted with another, and him be motivated by this desire to never have that visited upon a group of people he cares about ever again. You move past Magneto, and then you've got some of the great heavy hitters in terms of just these massive threat levels, whether it be Apocalypse, of course, he of the ever-shifting, never-defined power set. Mr. Sinister pops up. Omega Red pops up.
Mrs. Sinister.
Of course, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. The Dark Phoenix, of course, which we have seen multiple failed attempts at bringing to the big screen. William,
the Heckfire Club.
The Hellfire Club. William Stryker. Just great villain after great villain. Sabretooth. I mean, God, you could name so many individually. And me not being an X-Men aficionado, I don't really want to go too in-depth on any of them. They're all great. The depth of this rogues gallery, I would say, outside of Spider-Man, I think X-Men probably has, undoubtedly, the deepest rogues gallery, at least in Marvel Comics. Just so deep, so many different characters you can pull out that can give you a compelling story. So, and that's before you ever even get to Onslaught, because Lord knows Onslaught's out there, and there's probably still a great Onslaught story for somebody to tell. But yeah.
And what about Red X-Men. Onslaught?
Oh, Red Onslaught, even better. But yeah, the X-Men, great rogues gallery.
I agree with you, Nick. I agree with everything you just said, so much so that I'm going to have to wait until a little bit later to tell you more.
Mm-hmm.
But let me transition on to my number three. And my number three is actually a good buddy of the Green Lantern. My number three comes from the fastest man alive. Mm-hmm. My number three rogues gallery is The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Now, The Flash is an interesting case because it's not a character that I have read extensively growing up necessarily. I encountered him primarily through crossovers and team books. Occasionally, I would buy a Flash comic here or there. But I really came to love The Flash with, again, stop me if you've heard this before, Geoff Johns writing Wally West and then later Barry Allen. And, of course, the TV show. So a lot of these characters, I know, you know, they're maybe the versions that I know the best are from the TV show or maybe even from animated series. But also, I've read some great comics with these characters. I mean, first of all, there's, in my opinion, the Flash's greatest rogue, who is Hunter Zolomon. That's right. Not Professor Zoom, but Zoom. Hunter Zolomon. I think he's one of the best characters in comics, period. Hero, villain, whatever. He is incredibly compelling. His motivation is incredibly compelling. And at the time that Hunter Zolomon was created, he was pretty unique. There weren't a lot of characters like him at that time. FBI profiler who was genuinely good friends with Wally West and who becomes twisted by his own tragedies and comes to think that maybe that Wally is not the hero he needs to be. And so that Hunter takes it upon himself to inflict upon Wally the kinds of tragedies that he thinks will teach him how to become a greater hero. An incredible character. And then you've got Barry's greatest nemesis, Professor Zoom, the Reverse Flash, Eobard Thawne, whatever you want to call him. He's got a thousand names, but he is no less an incredible villain. He's the man responsible in the modern era for the death of Barry's mother, the framing of Barry's father. He has come back repeatedly over the years to tarnish Barry's reputation during the Mark Waid years, to haunt Barry from beyond the grave, to come back from death multiple times, to frame Barry for the murder of his wife. Just all kinds of terrible things that he's done to Barry over the years, and sort of the archetype for that inverted version of the hero approach to making villains, and arguably has never been done better. You could argue than with the Reverse Flash. Then you've got Captain Cold, another character who was a modern Geoff Johns reclamation project early in his Flash run in about 2000, actually. And Captain Cold now is one of the preeminent DC villains. He's almost been an anti-hero at times. He's the villain with a moral code. You talked a little bit about Magneto a minute ago. Captain Cold is a little bit of that for the Flash, that villain that you can kind of sympathize with, the villain who, yeah, he's a bad guy. Yeah, he will rob and steal and plunder, but he's only going to go so far. He does have a line that he will not cross. And he will hold others accountable to that line as well. So Captain Cold is certainly a compelling villain. Then there's his partner in crime, Heatwave, and all the other rogues, Heatwave, Mirror Master, the Trickster. These characters that all have, Weather Wizard, that all have gimmicks, but they all have different gimmicks that make them stand out from the crowd. Probably you could fairly compare them to the Shockers and Rhinos of the world, but in some ways, I feel like they're more compelling because Rhino's a big guy in a suit that hits people hard. Shocker has gauntlets that shock people, obviously. Tombstone's a big, tough guy that's hard to kill. But, you know, with Mirror Master, he literally has an entire mini-universe unto himself when he jumps into this mirror dimension. Weather Wizard, of course, controls the weather like Storm. Heat Wave is the inverse of Captain Cold. So it creates a lot of visually interesting things to see on the page. And then you go beyond that and you dig into someone like Gorilla Grodd, who is another one of the most famous DC villains. And you could argue is a Justice League villain, but I counted him as a Flash villain first and foremost. That's who he's most commonly been in opposition to. Even someone like Vandal Savage, who has popped up many times to battle the Flash over the years. In fact, the post-crisis Wally West, his first major fight is against Vandal Savage. So I think all in all, when you look at the depth across his rogue gallery, the Flash certainly has earned his spot at number three. And probably, to be completely fair, he has got the rogue gallery that probably compares best with Spider-Man's in terms of there's a lot of similarities and overlaps in the way that they're villain tiers are structured. So, but yeah, the Flash is my number three, Nick.
Interesting. As you know, I'm not as high on the Flash Rogues Gallery as you are, but that's fine. That's to each their own. Moving on to my number three, I'm going to go with one you've already mentioned earlier, and that, of course, is Green Lantern. And it's you know, you acknowledge this a bit as well. Hard to separate the personal bias towards the character and the stories and the personal attachment we have from this discussion about their rogues gallery. You mentioned so many of them that were expertly called out. Sinestro, of course, arguably the most relatable and sympathetic, or I don't know about sympathetic, mm-hmm. but at least understandably relatable villain in DC Comics today. Great Certainly. Work from Jeff Johns in reclaiming that character. Some other ones you failed to mention. Krona would be a big one.
Oh, yeah.
Who is
the
out
Mad
there.
Mad Guardian.
Is a great character. And then I'm going to make the argument that the biggest one, and ultimately the biggest villain in the entire Jeff Johns run, the Guardians of the Universe themselves. Always an idea that was kind of teased and hemmed and hawed over through decades of Green Lantern comics, but nobody ever really went all in on it the way Jeff Johns did, and really called out the Guardians for not realizing that lacking emotion and divorcing yourself from emotion divorces you from what makes you alive, which is ultimately at the point of that entire Green Lantern story, I think, is embracing the emotion, good, both good and bad, learning how to control it and overcome it. So great depth in the Green Lantern's rogues gallery and arguably the best example of improving and overhauling a rogues gallery in modern history over the last, as we've said, 15 years.
And it shows it can be done. Even mm-hmm. the rogues galleries that we dismissed at the beginning of the show, with the right creators in place, mm-hmm. those rogues galleries can be redeemed. And we saw that with Green Lantern. A lot of these characters were nothing for a long time until the right people got a hold of them and turned around. And one villain neither one of us mentioned, Parallax. Mm. The Parallax entity has been a huge, consistently recurring villain character in the Green Lantern mythos. So certainly an excellent choice there, Nick, and one close to both of our hearts. And one that's close to my heart is one that you have also already mentioned. At number two on my list, I have Marvel's merry band of mutants, the X-Men. You already went over a lot of what I was going to talk about this rogues gallery. One of the frustrations that we talked about during X-Month that I had with many of the X-Men movies is they were so fixated on Magneto at times that I felt like they didn't really serve the depth of rogues that you have in the X-Men universe, which is nothing to say negative about Magneto. Magneto is clearly their best villain. He's amazing. Deep, relatable, consistently evolving over time and devolving and then evolving again. And just an incredible character, the Joker of Marvel Comics, in my opinion. But there's others too. There's Sabretooth, who has always been Wolverine's foe, but also has vexed the other X-Men at various times over the years. You've got Juggernaut, who is probably the best villain of his archetype that there's been, that big, bruising, brute character, big, dumb jock, basically, that inherits these powers of the Crimson Gem of Sidorak. and has been a problem for his stepbrother Charles, who he bullied since he was a kid ever since, and always provides entertaining stories. You've got characters like the Marauders. You've got Strife. My God, Strife. Do I need to get into Strife's backstory, Nick? Oh, my. The clones. So many levels of clonedom and Summerses that you can get into to lead to the awesome peak Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee, Image Guys era of Marvel with the Strife costume of metal everywhere. I love Strife. I love Apocalypse, as you mentioned. Mr. Sinister. The Sentinels. The Sentinels, these mindless drones created by the government to oppress minorities. The government, the greatest villain other than Magneto in the Marvel, in the X-Men universe, is the government, the American federal government, because of their perpetual, continual attempts to silence the loud minority, to hold the X-Men down, to crush them beneath their booted heels, to put every impediment possible in the way of acceptance and tolerance and integration. So the government stands out as a villain in this situation. Mojo, my boy Mojo, a fat villain. I got to show love for fat villains, Nick. I mentioned the Kingpin earlier for Spider-Man. Green Lantern doesn't really have any fat villains that I can think of. Oh, Hector Hammond, who we didn't mention earlier.
Yeah, we left Hector Hammond off.
He's not fat, but his head's fat.
His head's fat, well, yeah.
In this case, certainly Mojo is a fat guy, and he's got a metal chair and stuff, and they're and flips the TVs on and off, and slobbering all over himself constantly. There's so many great characters. You get into you mentioned the Dark Phoenix, the Hellfire Club. You could just go on and on and on about all these wonderful characters. The Weapon X program with Stryker, William, and others. You've got, of course, you know, Stryker, William Stryker in the comics is a reverend, but whatever. The Weapon X program in general is certainly in this running of great villainous characters. You just go on and on and on. There's so many compelling foes for the X-Men that have cropped up over time. And even as we've made the argument with Reed Richards, as we've made the argument with the Guardians of the Universe, you can make the argument that Charles Xavier at times has been an X-Men villain. The way he has lied to and manipulated his students over the years certainly has created a lot of problems that would not have existed otherwise. So he could even be counted among this. The X-Men is such a rich tapestry of characters, and it's exciting to think about the new audiences that are going to be exposed to all of these new and exciting ideas and characters that we got to see in the comics and on cartoons when we were kids. So the X-Men, I have no reservations about putting them at number two on my list. I think the argument could be made for them to be number one on my list, but I'm going to keep them at number two.
Well said, sir. Well said. And I think I know who your number one is going to be, and I'll throw this out there. My number two, Superman.
Oh, my God. Oh, my boy.
As you know, I'm not the biggest. I have come to appreciate Superman over the last, in recent years. But as you know, I've never been the biggest fan. I've always found the character of Clark Kent himself not to be the most compelling thing on the face of the planet. But hard to deny the strength of his rogues gallery when you consider the names I'm about to mention. And I'll just focus on three primarily. You can do a much better job of getting into the depth of the gallery than I can. Lex Luthor, undoubtedly one of, if not the premier villains in all of DC Comics, right up there alongside any of Batman's biggest hitters, right up there with the Joker. Much like Magneto, a character that movie studios seem to be falling all over themselves to get to, no matter what. They're dead set on putting Lex Luthor in every Superman story, it feels like. Brainiac, a fantastic character that I would argue hasn't really gotten his just due. And yes, I understand I haven't watched Krypton. It's on my to-do list. Get off my back about it. And then finally, Darkseid. As you mentioned earlier, you could easily count him as a Justice League villain, but his primary physical threat throughout his existence as a character has been Superman. And he has provided that kind of threat that Superman knows he can fully unleash on. He can let go and release the full potential of his power upon, and the one who threatens him you know, most fundamentally, because he knows that there's every time he faces off against Darkseid, there's a real chance he might lose, and that if he does, the fate of the entire universe could be at stake. So those are the big three. I mean, you can throw the other ones out there, such as Doomsday, obviously, such as the Parasite is a good one that I've always kind of enjoyed. Maxima, who isn't really a villain anymore, but she just wanted to. You know, she just wanted to see what was going on.
She wanted to sow her royal oats.
She wanted to see what was going on underneath the underwear, and then the tights beneath that. So, Superman's got a great rogues gallery.
To get through.
Yeah, the great rogues gallery. Even if I'm still not the biggest fan of his as a character himself. So, yeah, I'm going Superman at number 2.
Nick, you're a scholar, and you're a gentleman, and you might even be an officer and a gentleman. I don't know. I haven't seen that movie in a while, so I'm not sure how you compare to Richard Gere. However, what I am sure of is that that's my painting. Because at my number 1, I have Superman, a.k.a. the Man of Steel, a.k.a. the Man of Tomorrow, a.k.a. Mr. Gacho as in Gacho Ass. That's not really one of his nicknames, sadly. But you mentioned the three heaviest hitters of his rogues gallery. Lex Luthor goes without saying. That's his Joker. That's his Magneto, his Sinestro, go on and on. Amazing character. They've done a lot with him. A lot of great stories. President Lex, I'd recommend. Really good one.
Currently Apex Lex?
I don't know what all that's about, man. I'm way behind on all that stuff. I couldn't tell you anything about Apex Lex. I do know that the Apex Predator is Randy Orton.
He's a Martian.
Oh. I also know Brainiac is another great character. You mentioned the classic Geoff Johns story. Brainiac is the one to check out if you want to read a great Brainiac story. Certainly there have been dozens and dozens since the 60s and the 50s even. The other one you mentioned was Darkseid. I certainly count him as a Superman villain, even though you could make the argument for Justice League as well or New Gods. But Darkseid, when he first appeared in the 70s, was sort of trying to he appeared in the Jimmy Olsen comics as sort of this background figure, and he was in opposition to Superman pretty much from the get-go because he viewed Superman as his number one obstacle to taking over Earth, and he viewed Earth as the natural extension of where he could go from Apocalypse to expand their empire. And time and time again over the decades, every time Darkseid has tried to step up and take down the heroes of Earth, it has been one guy that has constantly been in his way, and it's Superman. And likewise, Superman has constantly found a foe in the guy who is really his distinct opposite, because whereas Superman represents the good in humanity, represents the optimism, represents positivity, represents all of our best characteristics as a society, what we should strive for. Darkseid is the absolute opposite. Darkseid represents death. He represents evil. He represents hatred, all the negative qualities in life. And Darkseid is essentially the king of the haters ball, Nick. He hopes all the bad things in life happen to all of us and only us. And so
he thinks Rosie O'Donnell wears underwear with dick holes in them?
Dick holes in them, exactly. And
one of the greatest lines in sketch comedy history that no one talks about, in my opinion.
So Darkseid, you know, he's this physical threat to Superman, the Omega beams. In fact, he's really been portrayed usually as being Superman's physical superior. The Omega beams, the strength and all that. But he's also a tactician, and he has absolutely no morals at all. He does not have anything stopping him from doing anything. He will kill a baby in a moment's notice. He will destroy a small puppy and then crush it.
Now I have an image, or not even an image, a vocal recording in my head of a fat bastard as Darkseid.
Oh, you keep your money and I'll get your baby. No, really, I'm going to get your baby.
Trying to put his hand behind his back, his hands behind his back, but he can't because he's too fat.
Just give me a minute here. So he's a great villain. And then you get into probably the number 4 behind that, and the number 2, at least in terms of media adaptations, Zod. Is General Zod.
Yeah.
Another great character that ties Superman in a mirror way to his homeland, sort of a bitter reminder of the negative aspects of Krypton that he never got to experience. Mr. Mixel Pidlick, certainly more on the comedic
that's
side.
Good. You used to have trouble with that.
I used to have a lot of trouble with that. But Mr. Mixel Piddalick has certainly led to some great comedy stories over the years, some rather interesting and far out stories from the likes of Grant Morrison and others. And
recently played a key role in the whole Rebirth conundrum.
Yes, yes, he did. And then, of course, you've got the cyborg Superman, who I mentioned earlier for Green Lantern, who is a classic Superman villain. And then you go down the line, and you've got your parasites, your toy mans, your pranksters, characters like that that are minor nuisances. Intergang. I haven't mentioned Intergang yet. Intergang has been a huge Superman threat since the 70s. It's almost weird because it's a street-level threat for Superman, because one thing that he has a hard time combating is the propensity for mankind to do bad things. And in this case, it's a bunch of street thugs and gangs that are armed with Darkseid's technology. So that in and of itself is interesting. Another one that we haven't mentioned, Lobo. Lobo has perpetually, even though he's an anti-hero or even a hero in DC a lot of times and has his own title, he has consistently popped up as an enemy of Superman. I remember the first time I read Lobo in a book was around 1990. He popped up in Superman trying to collect a bounty and has this knockdown drag out over the course of like two issues. One of Action Comics and one of Superman, where they just have this huge fight with each other. And they've constantly been at odds ever since then, because to Superman, Lobo is this annoying pest who's a murderer and a psychopath, but there's nothing really you can do about it. And to Lobo, Superman is this annoying Boy Scout that there's nothing he can do about it. You know, they seemingly can't get rid of each other. And every time they fight, it pretty much goes to a draw. So Lobo is persistently there. And then, of course, the other big one for me is Doomsday, who is the murder, death, kill, the nuclear option, if you will, the rainmaker, as we were talking about earlier, of Superman villains. At least when handled right, when Doomsday shows up, it should mean that things are not going to go well for our hero. It's going to be bad news. And Doomsday is that sort of the juggernaut character, go on down the list, Galactus, whatever you want to say, the character that shows up, and boy, it's going to take a lot to overcome this guy. So, yeah, Superman just has so many different styles of villains. Lex uses his mind. Zod uses his tactician abilities, tactical abilities. Doomsday uses his pure brawn. And Mixel Piddalick uses magic. Lobo uses being an asshole. It's just everybody has something. And I think that speaks to why it's my number one choice of non-Batman rogues galleries.
Absolutely. Moving on to my number one, and this is no surprise given how we opened the show and our discussion during Spider Month. To me, hands down, it is Spider-Man at number one. And the reason why is pretty simple. Not only am I looking for big-time A-list villains, as I said, which I think Spider-Man has several, in the case of Dr. Octopus, in the case of Norman Osborn, Harry Osborn, Venom. You could maybe make an argument for a couple others, but let's stick to those four. What also makes Spider-Man Rogues Gallery great is he has so many villains that have deeply personal connections to him, deeply personal connections to Peter Parker, that make these confrontations not just physical, but emotional confrontations as well. Norman Osborn, for God's sake, fathered twins with his dead girlfriend and then killed the girlfriend. I mean, how much more personal could you get? Doc Ock stole his body, tried to marry his a 247-year-old aunt. Harry Osborn was his best friend who slowly grew to hate him because of what he thought he had done to his father, and also because of Harry's own paranoia and drug addiction. Eddie Brock blames Peter Parker for all the things that he has lost in his life, whereas the Venom symbiote blames Spider-Man for rejecting him, essentially, combining to create one of the great villains in all of comics. The Lizard is a man who Peter Parker admires and looks up to and genuinely wants to help and wants to see him, you know, move past his demons, and yet he keeps falling back into the same old trap, and every time Spider-Man has to be the guy who has to put his mentor down, essentially. So you just have so many great characters that torture Peter emotionally, physically, psychologically. And when you get into that and then you combine it with the depth of this rogues gallery. As we, as you mentioned earlier, Kraven the Hunter, Electro, Rhino, the Chameleon, the Jackal, all great concepts. And then you throw in the fact that you can take all these characters and mix and match them in any way you want to into the Sinister Six, which is one of the great villainous team-up concepts in comics. This idea of Spider-Man up against six of his biggest villains, and how is he going to overcome this? They've gone back to the well with it time and time again, and yet it still works in a way that, you know, other concepts, they've tried the same thing with other characters. Like, you know, there's not really a great example of all of Batman's villains teaming up to take him down. That great story hasn't been told. Spider-Man, you can go back to that, and it just works for whatever reason, because it's that idea of the Parker luck. And of course, it would be just his luck that all of his villains would agree to put their differences aside for the purposes of taking him down. So all those characters, Kingpin, so many others.
It makes sense now too. Why Spider-Man's rogues stand out to you so much? Because the Sinister Six sounds a lot like the Alliance to End Hulkamania. Where a bunch of villains of the hero that really, you know, in most circumstances wouldn't get along, put aside their differences for the purposes of trying to take down the hero.
Yeah, and they never succeed, do they?
They didn't even come close. I was about to say they came pretty, but no, they didn't.
What we need to do is take Spider-Man's entire rogues gallery and lock them in a triple steel cage, and then we're going to have Spider-Man and Bonesaw McGraw go through the entire cage, taking them out. As if they were just completely ineffectual.
Are we gonna bring in like randomly new characters that no one's ever heard of before? Mm-hmm. One of which is really fat, and the other one of which is really tall, and
yes,
vaguely resembles a guy that used to be in a movie with one of the heroes.
Absolutely, all these sound like great ideas. But yeah, personal connections to his villains, variety in terms of being able to form these different incarnations of the Sinister Six, and just again, what I would consider to be at least four big-time A-list villains, the depth and the personal connections put Spider-Man over the top for me.
There you have it, folks. Those are our lists. Those are what we consider to be, quite frankly, the greatest rogues galleries in comics, other than Batman, of course. Mm-hmm. Let us know your thoughts. Who have we excluded? Who do we leave out? Who do we diss by not including on our lists? Booster Gold, does he have a great rogues gallery? Let us know. I mentioned already the places you can contact us: Twitter, gphillips8652, nickduke87, Facebook, Place to Be Nation Comics, email, gregp@placetobenation.com, nickd@placetobenation.com. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have reading, watching, the rundown. We just got everything under the sun. We're not going to have reading, just as a heads up, but we're going to have other stuff. JR might make an appearance. You never know what could happen.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop Feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, oh, we're back from a break. I'm glad that you're still listening. Oh, yeah. They're still listening, Nick. Isn't that great?
They were. Now they're not now.
Yes, good. All right. Well, we got a lot going on here at Place to Be Nation. On our pop feed, for instance, which you're listening to right now. Mm-hmm. we've got just a litany of items going on that you should check out in your, if you've subscribed. And if you're not subscribed, what the hell are you thinking? Hit that subscribe button and find all these great shows. First of all, Todd Weber has brought back Weber has issues.
All right. I thought I was.
Oh, and actually, Nick, you're supposed to be doing this part. So you go ahead. Take up the rest of it for me.
Yeah, and while you're, you know, leave us a rating, a review, and a comment always is nice. Comments are always good on our podcast.
We like those 5-star ratings, folks. Yep.
Todd Weber brings back Weber Has Issues in a new podcast talking about 3 Marvel books and how accessible they are to comic fans. This time around, it's Marvel's Epilogue by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross. History of the Marvel Universe number 1 from Mark Waid and Javier Rodriguez, and the much hyped House of X number 1 by Jonathan Hickman and Pepe Larraz. Jenny and Tim flipped the script on this edition of Talkin' Pop by welcoming multi-show host and multi-talented Andy Atherton for a journey that touches on Andy's ventures as a podcaster, producer, screenwriter, bartender, DJ, and choreographer. Hard traveling fanboys, that's us. We did that Jonah Hex show. Go check it out. Pop Goes the Movies when Andy and J. Arsenio D'Amato get together to discuss the latest major summer movie release, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, in a spoiler-filled review. And, of course, on a new Sunday Groove, David talks his current favorite songs, the new movie Yesterday, and the Beatles. Steve and Kelly are back with a new Songs with Friends, diving into Tom Petty's You Don't Know How It Feels and LL Cool J's Hey Lover. The Greatest Song of the 80s tournament continues. There will be 6 polls a day posted for round 1. You can get in on the action on Facebook by searching PTBN's Greatest Song of the 80s tournament and liking the page. Be sure to weigh in. Greg, it's your turn now.
Hey, Nick.
Yes?
Do you think that George Strait's The Chair has a chance at winning the tournament?
It would have to be nominated, would it not?
Yes. Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot.
We only have like 4 country songs out of 200.
And they all got beaten.
And they all got beaten because we Place to Be Nation caters to a Northeastern audience. We'll vote for 27 Billy Joel songs, but not country.
Oh, it's accurate.
It is.
We are being discriminated against like Mohammed Hassan for different reasons. All right. Over on the wrestling feed, PTBN Wrestling, which you should also hit the subscribe button on, Ben Zanny welcomes indie wrestler Jaden Newman to Row 1, Seat 1. No Holds Barred is back. Aaron and JT return with a GWWE PPV/TV match ever focused episode. In the latest episode of the PTB podcast, JT, Scott, and John D'Amato break down Survivor Series from 1989. That was a great show that included numerous – well, it was a show, and it included the likes of Zeus and others, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I am mistaken. In any event, don't miss the pilot episode of a new ECW-focused podcast titled – PTBN Extreme Three-Way Dance, where hosts JT Rosero, Jennifer Smith, and John D'Amato review the concept of the show and what is to come. And actually, they've done a new episode, a true first episode since then, focusing on the night the line was crossed. What was the night the line was crossed with you, Nick?
Oh, God. I don't even know. So many times the line has been crossed with me, I can't even...
There's no line anymore at this point. On PlaceToBeNation.com, PTBN's tribute to 1994 is off and running with a brand new piece on Woodstock 1994, as well as a piece where JT looks back at Bob Backlund challenging Bret Hart for the WWF title on Superstars. Nick, how successful was Bob Backlund during that match?
I don't recall.
Not very. He turned heel. He was so upset at getting beat by the superior superstar.
What about the later match?
We're not here to talk about that later match, Nick. That wasn't the topic of discussion. That happened in November. We're not in November yet, are we? We believe in theme months here at Place to Be Nation. Mm. And we'll talk about Bret Hart getting screwed out of the title at Survivor Series 94 when we get to November. Mention Glenn's weekly... What an idiot. Glenn's weekly walk. Is
what, it's been mentioned.
I directly read the line here instead of doing what it said me to do.
Hey, the weekly walk. There it is.
The weekly walk is exists on PlayStation.com. Glenn Butler tells us all about the weird and wild and wacky stuff throughout the world and the World Wide Web. And we also want you to check out our social media pages and message board at Bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our greatest WWE pay-per-view and television matches project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching those lists. We also have a live chat watch-along thread where people are going through and watching some of the GWWE nominated threads. So if you're interested in that, just send a message to JT or our good buddy Tim Capel, and they will hook you up into our live watch group. With all that being said, I think we're done telling you what's going on here at the feed. And with that being said, we're going to move on to our weekly look at the PN news and notes in the world of comics, a segment we like to call The Rundown. Well, Nick, not a huge week of items this week, but yet a lot of sub-items in some of our topics, yes?
Yeah, so why don't you go ahead and lead it off? I think the primary source of news on the television front, as it's been for some time now here on the show, is the impending Crisis on Infinite Earths on the CW coming up this fall.
That's correct, and a lot of news items came out this week. Well, you could argue, actually, which of these was the biggest story.
I have a pretty strong feeling about which one of those is the biggest, but I'll let you pick which one to lead with.
I think the one that's gotten the most buzz is the fact that for the first time ever, the greatest Batman voice actor of all time, Kevin Conroy,
this is amazing,
is going to be able to play Bruce Wayne in live action. That's right. In the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover, Kevin Conroy will be playing an older version of Bruce Wayne, presumably from the future. And whether this is the Batman Beyond Bruce Wayne, the Kingdom Come Bruce Wayne, we don't know yet, but we do know that for the first time ever, the voice of Batman from our childhoods, the man who many say is still the definitive version of Batman in their minds, is going to have a chance to play that character for us all to see. What an awesome bit of news, Nick.
This is really incredible. Some are already theorizing he could be playing the version of Bruce Wayne from a Batman Beyond-like future. Some are theorizing he could be the older Bruce Wayne from the Kingdom Come universe, since we know that Kingdom Come is going to play a role somehow in it, with Brandon Routh playing Kingdom Come Superman. Lots of different directions they could take it. If they go the Batman Beyond route, do you think they get Will Friedle as well for a cameo?
Oh, man, that would be neat, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be pretty crazy, actually. You know, the other possibility we haven't thought about, what if he plays Dark Knight Returns Batman?
I don't know. That he's kind of spindly for a Dark Knight Returns version of Batman, don't you think?
True. But certainly he could play that old, grizzled, you know, mad at the world version of Bruce.
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't matter what he does. The idea of this is amazing, and I'm in favor of it.
Certainly. But that's not where the big news ends. The other bit of big news is that Black Lightning, a show that I am a season behind on almost at this point, that I have to catch up with on Netflix before the new seasons begin, and a show that I enjoy. Black Lightning, after being completely separate from all the other CW DC comic shows, will be taking part in this Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover, which means we don't know the extent of it yet, but we do know that these characters will be seen during the crossover.
A good move. I mean, if you're doing Crisis on Infinite Earths, you need to have, at the very least, all your current shows involved. Not to mention the fact that they're going back and pulling shows from literally decades ago at this point. So, yeah, good move.
Yeah, absolutely. It just makes sense. Much like Lita's DVD back in the day, it just feels right. And The news doesn't stop there, Nick, because we got even more news coming, which is that the Arrow episode of the crossover, Arrow's entry in the Crisis crossover, which will be episode 8 of season 8 of Arrow, will be co-written by Mark Guggenheim, who's the Arrow executive producer, and the writer of the original Crisis on Infinite Earths comic book.
Ricky Watson just exploded somewhere.
Marv Wolfman. Ricky is ready to roll on this one. He's been Ricky rolled with Marv Wolfman announcement. But Marv Wolfman, the man that is halfway responsible for that, the classic of all classics and crossover stories, is going to get a chance to pen an episode of Arrow. This is really cool in all seriousness, Nick.
Yeah, it really is. Kind of a smart move. I mean, you know, we've often wondered why comic book creators don't get more input when it comes to adaptations of their properties, and this is arguably one of the most difficult properties to adapt, so makes sense that they would call in the master of the source material.
The master of the source material! Mm-hmm. I can't do it. Yeah, fantastic stuff there. And, unfortunately, when you get good stuff, sometimes bad stuff happens. And in this case, we know that Arrow is coming to an end, sadly. But what we didn't factor in, Nick, is that Arrow leaving does open up a spot in the lineup. We had just assumed that Batwoman was going to be filling Arrow's spot in the lineup. Mm-hmm. But not necessarily so, according to CW president Mark Pedowitz. Careful saying that name,
yes,
by the way.
That's a tricky one.
During a Television Critics Association event, Pedowitz said that he is looking for a new show to replace the soon-to-be-ending Arrow. He said he and the network don't plan on any of the other Arrowverse shows ending anytime soon. That includes Supergirl, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Black Lightning, and Batwoman. They're going to be going on. He believes the universe will continue for many years, and they are looking at possible replacement series to come in and join the slate. And now let's do some fantasy booking here, Nick. What do we want to see there? What do we think could be there?
I think the most obvious, the one that I think people are that if you had to bet money on it, I think we would all probably best guess is that it's a Star City 2040 show focusing on the future cast that has been established during this past season of Arrow's Flash Forward.
Yes.
And
Connor Hawke and
Mia Smoke.
Yeah, yep.
And who will continue to be featured in season 8. Outside of that, it gets interesting. I think there's a possibility of Constantine going back to his own show. I think that that could happen. I think, God, there are a lot of different ones. If I could pick any one that I want to, Diggle goes and does his own Green Lantern show.
I was about to say.
You know, but as we've discussed, the odds of the CW getting to do a Green Lantern show and what it would need to be, we have to admit that those odds are pretty low, right?
Pretty low, yeah.
So,
I would be neat if they had if we could get that show on Sci-Fi or on the DC Universe app.
But, oh, yeah, absolutely.
No, that's a great idea. That was what I was going to say as well. The John Diggle as a Green Lantern story would be amazing. An idea that I would float out there is a long gestating project they've never done that's kind of been rumored for a long time, which is Booster Gold.
There you go. See, a Booster, I think you could just have be a character on Legends rather than give him his own show.
That makes perfect sense. So let me just think about some other possibilities that might be out there. Maybe The Question. Of course, you could tie that into Batwoman.
The Question I would almost want to be a DC Universe show, though, because of the tone you could take with it.
Good point. Something like Hourman. Remember that floated Hourman idea from years ago that never happened? That could be cool.
Justice Society.
Oh, now that would be great. A period piece?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That would be fantastic, actually. But I think they're using the Justice Society for Stargirl, so... I don't know. There's so many DC characters out there that would be interesting characters to take on the small screen that we haven't seen yet. So the Spectre, my God, imagine a Spectre show done along the lines of that animated short they did.
Would be amazing.
So you could, you know, you could really get into the sort of supernatural with that. So yeah, a lot of great possibilities. I agree with you. I think the Constantine or the Star City shows are probably the most likely. But we'll see where it goes from there. Well, moving beyond the DC small screen on CW, we're going to stay actually on the small screen. We're going to stay with DC characters. And we're going to move over to the DCU app with the trailer for Season 2 of Titans. It dropped just this week, Nick. And have you had a chance to view it yet?
I have, yes.
Yes, I watched it as well. What did you ever finish the first season?
I did.
I can't remember.
I did. We talked about it.
Okay, what did you make of the trailer?
So it's a little interesting because if you remember the first season, I think one of the debates we had about it and one of the pieces of news that dropped about it was that they cut the first season short by an episode, and so the first season actually ends on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
To then have the trailer just move right past that cliffhanger is a bit weird because...
I agree.
You know, now we know that Raven's just walking around living a normal life, so that kind of takes away a little bit of the intrigue from the season premiere, but I digress. Very brief trailer. I think only like 50 seconds or something like that. But I will say I think the tone of it seems to be correcting a bit. I don't think that going ultra grimdark was the best fit for a Titans show. And this doesn't look like it's doing that. It looks like it's keeping some of the great action set pieces, but trying to lighten the character dynamics and have a little bit more snappy interplay and stuff like that. So I like the trailer. Brief, but... getting past my issues with feeling like we're seeing a little too much in terms of...
Yeah, they're blowing past the cliffhanger. I agree with that.
Right. Other than that, pretty good trailer.
And in this trailer, I agree with all that, all your entire take on that. I agree with all that. But also in this brief trailer, we get glimpses of several new characters that we haven't seen yet, such as Superboy, Crypto. We get to see Alfred walking and talking with Dick Grayson, which should be a fun dynamic. I hope he plays a big factor in this season. And at the very end, we get our first glimpse at the new Deathstroke. So always fun to see Deathstroke involved in any adaptation you can find. I will say, costume-wise, not my favorite look at Deathstroke so far, but it was a little bit of a dark shot, so maybe it'll look better when we see it in the light.
And it looked like it was inspired by some more of the early Deathstroke's costume designs rather than the more modern...
Right,
better costume design.
Correct. So we'll have to see what becomes of that. But yeah, certainly an impressive trailer in its own right. But I'm hoping that that they didn't kill the season premiere entirely with that.
Right.
Now the next item I have not even clicked on yet, so I don't even know what it's in regards to. But I'm going to scroll up to find the link. And see.
Now that so basically what is happening here, folks, is as you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is coming to an end, and ABC is keen on keeping Marvel-related programming on their network. And so right now, one of the things that is in active talks, ABC and Marvel are in the works of planning out a female-led Marvel show to replace Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after that show's 2020 finale. So we don't know what it would entail. ABC Entertainment President Carrie Burke said the characters would mostly be brand new, but I don't know if she means brand new as in original creations or brand new to ABC as in not spinoffs from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, it would be a very curious decision to have Marvel's name attached to a show that's all about newly created characters.
Right. This all comes from a Deadline report. Deadline doesn't specify what heroes ABC is centered on, but specifically mentions She-Hulk, Danielle Moonstar, and Misty Knight as possible candidates. So I don't know if the Misty Knight one is even possible, because wasn't there some sort of moratorium at the expiration of the Netflix agreement where they couldn't do anything with those characters for a certain
period of time? That was the word.
She-Hulk has been rumored for a long time, though, and you could easily...
And you could do it as a legal Ally McBeal kind of deal, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess that one makes the most sense of those options. But then again, it could be something entirely different. I think Ms. Marvel... I think ABC would love to have it, but I think Marvel probably wants to save that one for the MCU.
And isn't there a Ms. Marvel show coming out anyway on Freeform?
No, that's New Warriors with Squirrel Girl and...
Ah, they're separating Squirrel Girl and Marvel. And I guess I was conflating them because of that cartoon that we watched.
Yeah, Marvel Rising.
Well, an update on a story from last week, Nick. Speaking of Marvel rising, mm-hmm. Sony is rising with their hopes for the Venom sequel, as they have finally found their director. Andy Serkis, who we were talking about last week as being the guy that we were kind of hoping would get the gig, Andy Serkis has been circled and highlighted as the man that is likely to direct Venom. They're in talks to finalize right now, and he will be stepping into the director's chair to guide Tom Hardy and Woody Harrelson and company in the sequel. Nick, what do you make of this news? What are you hoping to see from Andy Serkis's Venom?
I have not yet seen anything that Andy Serkis has directed, but
nor have I.
Again, as we mentioned last week, the motion capture ties makes a lot of sense, and I am pumped for some Cletus Harrelson. So bring it on.
Yes, Carnage and Venom's interaction in this movie, if it's not absolutely hysterical, it'll be a miss from the studio, because yes. it should be. But when you combine Woody Harrelson's over-the-top portrayal of Cletus Cassidy that we've already caught only a glimpse of, and what we can only imagine of just his general approach to comedies, with the approach that Tom Hardy took to the Eddie Brock and Venom characters, should be dynamite, hopefully. We'll have to see. Well, with that being said, that's the end of the rundown. Let's move on to our newest feature here on the show, Nick. I don't know if you heard the new jingle last week. It's a segment we like to call Watchin'.
Watchin', what you be watchin'?
What you been watchin'?
So, what you been watchin', Nick?
Nothing, just playing more Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
We'll get to that in a moment. I have been watching absolutely nothing, actually, now that I think about it. No, wait. I went to the movie theater, but I did not see a comic book movie. I saw a movie that should have been a comic book movie. I saw Hobbs and Shaw, which felt like I was watching a comic book movie. Hilarious, fun, go see it. Good time at the movies. Lots of great cameos that apparently may have something to do with comic book movies. I don't know. We'll see. And other than that, no, I haven't watched any comic book material. But both of us have been doing just a little bit of playing, haven't we, Nick?
Yeah, I've been playing Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3. What have you been playing?
Are you still enjoying it?
I am. It's very good. It's also still very difficult.
I have noticed a sale that is actually still ongoing through August 20th.
Oh, yeah.
PlayStation Store is having a big summer sale. A lot of good deals on there. I'd recommend thumbing through it, seeing what you can find. There are some really good bargains that I've hemmed and hawed about. And I ended up getting the Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite Deluxe Edition. It was on sale for 60 or 65% off. I ended up getting it for $23. And I had played the demo of it. And I'm not good at fighting games, ever. Very not good at fighting games, particularly not good at Capcom fighting games. But the story looked fun, and for that price, I decided I couldn't pass it up. I'm not going to get a chance to play Ultimate Alliance on my PlayStation, because they haven't released it for that yet. So this will have to fill my Marvel void for a while. And I've only played one match of it so far, and it was fun. I just randomly hit buttons. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not good. But it certainly looks good, and the voices are fun, so that's all I got on that.
Awesome. Glad you're enjoying it.
Indeed. Well, that's the end of that. And that, I guess it's got to be about that time. Wait.
Oh, God. Oh, my. I'm very excited about this. I can't wait. God. What is that?
Hang on. Let's see. My God, it's a giant piece of paper, Nick, with writing on it. Hang on, let's see what it says. I got my magnifying glass out. This just in, folks. Ho-Ho Loon's biography is still listed on the award-winning WWE Network.
Yes.
Wow. Nick, this Ho-Ho Loon ticker is back and functional just like it was on day one. It's amazing.
If the only thing that results at the end of this show, whenever its run may end, is that one person went out and sought the good word of Ho-Ho Loon, then we will have done our job.
That's exactly right, Nick. And never has it been easier, by the way, for you to search and find mm-hmm. Ho-Ho Loon. You look for his name on the network. You pull up his biography. You look at his stats, you know, his height, his weight, and all that. And then you click on his full biography. And that really tells you all you need to know about the story of Ho-Ho Loon, the story of professional wrestling itself, and most importantly, the story of the great nation of China. So you really couldn't emphasize that enough, the importance of searching his name on the WWE Network. But yes, happy to report that, folks. I don't know who sends these alerts to us, Nick. They were out for like a year and a half, but by God, they're back. And we'll just have to see if it keeps up in future weeks.
Hopefully it will.
And with that being said, I'm looking at the plasma clock that has just been installed
the obscenely expensive hard-traveling Fanboy-a-tron 3000.
That's exactly right. And the Tron is telling me that it's time, the wrestling minute. Now, Nick, the G1 Climaxo is going on right now. That's sort of been foremost on our minds in our wrestling conversations. But we're also in the build-up to SummerSlam, biggest party of the summer, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And both Raw and SmackDown, we're doing the hard sells this week. And AEW is gearing up for their television premiere. They've announced more dates, Boston and
Philly.
Just a lot going on in the world. The NWA, just today, Nick, announced that they're coming to your neck of the woods, to Atlanta, to tape their studio wrestling show in Atlanta.
I did not know that. I knew they were taping a studio wrestling show. I didn't know it was going to be in Atlanta.
They're gonna do a studio show
in Atlanta. I still don't know who's a part of the NWA outside of Nick Aldis and Colt Cabana.
James Storm is the only other one that I know. Okay. I'm not sure who all else is involved. But what's on your mind in the wrestling world right now, Nick?
Oh, the G1, for sure. I think Raw and SmackDown have both been better. But the build to SummerSlam, for the most part, I think it's lacked a little, I don't know what. I think the Brock-Seth build's been real good, and I think the Trish and Charlotte thing is interesting. But for the most part, a lot of the matches here don't really feel like they have a lot of heat behind them. Bayley and Ember doesn't really make a whole lot of sense for me as a match. Just feels like a few they just pulled out of their ass that doesn't really have much heat behind it. They've done a better job of getting me interested in Becky and Natalya. I'll give them credit there. But for the most part, all my attention right now is in Japan for the G1. And I'm hoping by the end of this week, I'll be fully caught up and ready to watch the finals next week.
Ooh, yes, that's going to be big. I'm behind as well. I've fallen about three or four nights behind now. I'm hoping to catch up these next few days. But yeah, the G1 has been phenomenal. You know, you and I have been talking about it as you've been trying to catch up, and it's certainly been a standout. Some of the standout matches that I've seen include Okada and Ospreay, Ishii and Naito, Ishii and Moxley, Shingo and Moxley. Any others that I haven't mentioned here that stood out in your mind?
Oh,
I mean, all of them have been, so many have been great, but.
Oh God. Ishii and Naito. I'm sure you mentioned that one.
Yeah.
Okada and Ospreay. I'm still real high on Ibushi and Kenta from the first night, which I know is, I am the outlier there, and I'm prepared to live with that.
Archer versus virtually everyone.
Archer and Ospreay, Ibushi and Ospreay and Sonata. Pretty much all the Ospreay matches in this tournament, unless he's wrestling Bad Luck Fale, have just been outstanding. He's had a great tournament. Zack Sabre Jr. has. Really, the entire A block has just over-delivered.
They killed it, yeah.
Consistently. So.
And still mathematically alive, at least as of the recording, I believe. Toru Yano. So.
I'm not sure. Has there been another event yet?
I don't know. That's a great question, Nick. It's amazing. Our buddy Garner has been able to keep up with it better than we have because it was late night hours, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what does it.
But yes, we'll have to catch up so we can all discuss. And then other than that, I would say SummerSlam.
As of this recording, we know now the match that will decide A Block on A Block's final night. And I think here in just a couple hours, we're going to get the penultimate night of B Block, which should provide some clarity, because as of right now, with only two nights left in B block, 7 of the 10 competitors are still mathematically alive.
We're probably going to have a very eccentric last night for B block, where a lot of guys will still be in play,
right?
Hopefully,
and it'll all depend on various results and tiebreakers and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. But as far as the SummerSlam build, I've been very happy with the Orton and Kofi build. Not have either of those guys on the show this week on SmackDown Live. The video packages have been phenomenal, and it just goes to show that sometimes less is more. sometimes you don't actually need to have guys physically touch each other to build up their feud. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's been a great example of that. So they've done a good job. AJ and Ricochet should be a great show. AJ and Ricochet, on paper, there's no reason why this shouldn't be an excellent wrestling show. But it's going to be interesting. And count me among the few, seemingly, that is excited for Goldberg to come back and squash Dolph Ziggler.
No.
Because I've been wanting to see Dolph take a spear for many years now.
As we discussed earlier offline, I want it to be the most cartoonish spear I've ever seen. I want his boots to literally fly off. I want him to fly over the top rope and do like four somersaults.
I hope that Dolph right now is studying tapes of competitors such as Kiwi and Christian in terms of how to get your body sawed in half by a man's shoulder.
Absolutely.
So, yes, good stuff all around in the world of wrestling. It's an exciting time to be a fan, as we've talked about many times here. Well, that's about it for that. And, you know, Nick, I have to say that that's probably going to be it for us tonight, right?
No, actually. As you know, Greg, we're going to end the show as we've been doing for some time with a little musical performance from WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross. And tonight, Jim is here to sing you a very special song about one of his favorite pastimes, actually. So, Jim, why don't you just go ahead and take it away?
Well, thank you there, Nick. Listen to the show again, and I like what you're doing. I like what you're talking about here. And I want to tell you about some changes that have been going on in my life since I have encountered a certain product. Now, this product is known as Blue Chew. You familiar with this, Nick?
I've heard of it, yes.
Now, Blue Chew, just cutting out the bullshit, Blue Chew will make you hard. It will cause the blood to flow from your heart or from wherever it begins in your body all the way down to your crotch region. It will then cause your male appendage to extend itself and become rigid. And with this, you might find yourself having some lady attention or male attention, whatever you're looking for. Folks, Blue Chew will get the job done. Now, that reminds me of a song, a tune, that I've been singing to myself a lot lately, Nick. I think you'll know the tune very, very well. I love myself. I want you to love me. When I feel down, I want you above me. I search myself. I want you to find me. I forget myself. I want you to remind me. Now, I don't want anybody else. When I think about you, I touch myself. Oh, yeah, I don't want anybody else. Oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. You are the one who makes me come a-running. You're the sun who makes me shine. When you're around, I'm always laughing. I want to make you mine. I close my eyes and see you before me. Think I would die if you were to ignore me. A few could see just how much I adore you. I would get down on my hands and knees, and I would do anything for you. And why, you might ask me? Well, I don't want anybody else. When I think about you, Austin, I touch myself. I'll be honest with myself. Oh, I don't want anybody else's ass. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Go, man, go. There's an instrumental interlude. Just let it breathe for a minute. I'm working a body part, telling a story, allowing the instruments to do the job for me. Working smarter, not harder. I love myself, and I want you, Stone Cold Steve Austin, to love me. When I feel down, I want you hovering above me with your golden knee braces. I search myself, and I want you to find me. I forget myself, and I want you to remind me of just who the man is. I don't want anybody else's ass. When I think about your ass, I touch myself. No, I don't want anybody else. For God's sake, I told you a million times. Oh, no. No, no, no. No, I want you. I want your ass. I don't want anybody else. When I think about you, I touch myself. Oh, 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 ha, 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 oh, oh. I don't want anybody else. When I think about you, I touch myself. Oh, I don't want anybody else. When I think about you, Jumpin' Jim Ross with a white meat baby face, I think about you, and I touch myself. I touch myself. I touch myself. I touch myself. When I think about you, I touch myself. I touch myself. I don't want. I touch myself. Anybody else? I touch myself when I think about you. I honestly do now. I touch myself. I don't want. I touch myself. Anybody else? I touch myself when I think about you. I honestly, for God's sake, I do. I touch myself. I'm not going to lie to you now, Nick. Sometimes I get home and take my blue chew. I take me some barbecue sauce now. And I rub me the barbecue sauce down in my region. And I touch myself.
Our traveling fanboys.